I was born into a large peasant family. Father, four wives and about 28 children. I also belonged, as well all did in those days, to a wider extended family and to the community as a whole. We spoke Kikuyu as we worked in the fields. We spoke Kikuyu in and outside the home. I can vividly recall those evenings of storytelling around the fireside. It was mostly the grown-ups telling the children, but everybody was interested and involved. We children would retell the stories the following day to other children who worked in the fields picking the pyrethrum flowers, tea leaves or coffee beans out of our European and African landlords. The stories, with mostly animals as the main characters, were all told in Kikuyu. Hare, being small, weak but full of innovative wit and cunning, was our hero. We identified with him as he struggled against the brutes of prey like lion, leopard, hyena. His victories were our victories and we learned that struggle against hostile nature, drought, rain, sun, wind, a confrontation often forcing them to search for forms of cooperation. But we were also interested in their struggles amongst themselves, and particularly between the beasts and the victims of prey. These twin struggles, against nature and other animals, reflected real-life struggles in the human world. Not that we neglected stories with human beings as the main characters. There were two types of characters in such human-centered narratives, the species of truly human beings with qualities of courage, kindness, mercy, hatred of evil, concern for others, and the man-eat-man two-mouthed species with qualities of greed, selfishness, individualism and hatred of what was good for the larger cooperative community. Cooperation as the ultimate good in a community was a constant theme. It could unite human beings with animals against ogres and beasts of prey, as in the story of how Dove, after being fed with castor oil seeds, was sent to fetch a smith working far away from home, and whose pregnant wife was being threatened by these man-eating two-mouthed ogres. There were good and bad storytellers. A good one could tell the same story over and over again, and it would always be fresh to us, the listeners. He or she could tell a story told by someone else, and make it more alive and dramatic. The differences really were in the use of words, and images and the inflection of voices to affect different tones. Zero, we therefore learned to value words for their meaning and nuances. Language was not a mere string of words. It had a suggestive power well beyond the immediate and lexical meaning. Our appreciation of the suggestive magical power of language was reinforced by the games we played with words through riddles, proverbs, transpositions of syllables, or through nonsensical, but musically arranged words. So we learned the music of our language on top of the content. The language, through images and symbols, gave us a view of the world, but it had a beauty of its own. The home and the field were then our pre-primary school, but what is important, for this discussion, is that the language of our evening teach-ins, and the language of our immediate and wider community, and the language of our work in the fields were one. And then I went to school, a colonial school, and this harmony was broken. The language of my education, was no longer the language of my culture. I first went to Kamandura, missionary run and then to another called Manguu by nationalists grouped around the Kikuyu Independent and Karinga Schools Association. Our language of education was still Kikuyu. The very first time I was ever given an ovation for my writing was over a composition in Kikuyu. So for my first 4 years there was still harmony between the language of my formal education and that of the Limuru peasant community. It was after the declaration of a state of emergency over Kenya in 1952 that all the schools run by patriotic nationalists were taken over by the colonial regime and were placed under district education boards chaired by Englishmen. English became the language of my formal education. In Kenya, English became more than a language. It was the language, and all the others had to bow before it in deference. Thus one of the most humiliating experiences was to be caught speaking Kikuyu in the vicinity of the school. The culprit was given corporal punishment, 3 to 5 strokes of the cane on bare buttocks, or was made to carry a metal plate around the neck with inscriptions such as I am stupid, or I am a donkey. Sometimes the culprits were fined money they could hardly afford. And how did the teachers catch the culprits? A button was initially given to one pupil who was supposed to hand it over to whoever was caught speaking his mother tongue. Whoever had the button at the end of the day would sing who had given it to him, and the ensuing process would bring out all the culprits of the day. Thus children were turned into witch hunters, and in the process, were being taught the lucrative value of being a dot trader to one's immediate community. The attitude to English was the exact opposite. Any achievement in spoken or written English was highly rewarded. Prizes, prestige, applause, the ticket to higher, comms. English became the measure of intelligence and ability in the arts, the sciences, and all the other branches of learning. English became the main determinant of a Dutch child's progress up the ladder of formal education. As you may know, the colonial system of education, in addition to its apartheid racial demarcation, had the structure of a pyramid. A broad primary base, a narrowing secondary middle, and an even narrower university apex. Selections from primary into secondary were through an examination, in my time, called Kenya African Preliminary Examination, in which one had to pass 6 subjects ranging from maths to nature study and Kiswahili. All the papers were written in English. Nobody could pass the exam who failed the English language paper, no matter how brilliantly had done in the other subjects. I remember one boy in my class of 1954 who had distinctions in all subjects except English, which he had failed. He was made to fail the entire exam. He went on to become a turnboy in a bus company. I, who had only passes but a credit in English, got a place at the Alliance High School, one of the most elitist institutions for Africans in colonial Kenya. The requirements for a place at the university, Makerere University College, were broadly the same. Nobody could go on to wear the undergraduate red gown, no matter how brilliantly they had performed in all the other subjects, unless they had a credit, not even a simple pass, in English. Thus the most coveted place in the pyramid, and in the system, was only available to the holder of an English language credit card. English was the official vehicle and the magic formula to colonial elitedom. Literary education was now determined by the dominant language, while also reinforcing that dominance. Orature, oral literature, and Kenyan languages stopped. In primary school I now read simplified Dickens and Stevenson alongside Rider Haggard. Jim Hawkins, Oliver Twist, Tom Broad, Nut Hare, Leopard, and Lion were now my daily companions in the world of imagination. In secondary school, Scott and G.B. Shaw vied with more Rider Haggard, John Buchan, Alan Payton, Captain W.E. Johns. At Makerere I read English. From Chaucer to T.S. Eliot with a touch of Graham Greene. Thus language and literature were taking us further, and further from ourselves to other selves, from our world to other worlds. I started writing in Gikuyu language in 1977 after 17 years of involvement of Afro-European literature, in my case Afro-English literature. It was then that I collaborated with Gugi Wamini in the drafting of the play script, Gata Kandinda. The English translation was / will marry when I want. I have since published a novel in Gikuyu, Kitani Mitharabeni, English translation, Devil on the Cross, and completed a musical drama, Maidunjujira, English translation, Mother Sing for Me, 3 books for children, Jambanin Nambati Imathagu, Bathaturian Jambanin, Jambanin Nasibu Kangangi, as well as another novel manuscript, Madagari Manitruungi. Wherever I have gone, particularly in Europe, I have been confronted with the question, why are you now writing in Gikuyu? Why do you now write in an African language? In some academic quarters I have been confronted with the rebuke, apostrophe, why have you abandoned us? It was almost as if, in choosing to write in Gikuyu, I was doing something abnormal. But Gikuyu is my mother tongue. The very fact that what common sense dictates in the literary practice of other cultures is being questioned in an African writer is a measure of how far imperialism has distorted the view of African realities. It has turned reality upside down. The abnormal is viewed as normal, and the normal is viewed as abnormal. Africa actually enriches Europe. But Africa is made to believe that it needs Europe to rescue it from poverty. Africa's natural and human resources continue to develop Europe and America. But Africa is made to feel grateful for aid from the same quarters that still sit on the back of the continent. Africa even produces intellectuals who now rationalize this upside-down way of looking at Africa. I believe that my writing in Gikuyu language, a Kenyan language, an African language, is part and parcel of the anti-imperialist struggles of Kenyan and African peoples. In schools and universities our Kenyan languages, that is the languages of the many nationalities which make up Kenya, were associated with negative qualities of backwardness, underdevelopment, humiliation, and punishment. We who went through that school system were meant to graduate with a hatred of the people, and the culture and the values of the language of our daily humiliation and punishment. I do not want to see Kenyan children growing up in that imperialist imposed tradition of contempt for the tools of communication developed by their communities and their history. I want them to transcend colonial alienation. Colonial alienation takes two interlinked forms. An active, or passive, distancing of oneself from the reality around, and an active, or passive, identification with that which is most external to one's environment. It starts with a deliberate disassociation of the language of conceptualization, of thinking, of formal education, of mental development, from the language of daily interaction in the home, and in the community it is like separating the mind from the body, so that they are occupying two unrelated linguistic spheres in the same person. On the larger social scale it is like producing a society of bodiless heads and headless bodies. So I would like to contribute towards the restoration of the harmony between all the aspects and divisions of language so as to restore the Kenyan child to his environment, understand it fully, as to be in a position to change it for his collective good. I would like to see Kenya people's mother tongues, our national languages, carry a literature reflecting not only the rhythms of a child's spoken expression, but also struggle with nature and his social nature. With that harmony between himself, his language and his environment as his starting point, he can learn other languages, and even enjoy the positive humanistic, democratic and revolutionary elements in other people's literatures and cultures without any complexes about his own language, his own self, his environment. the All-Kenya national language, i.e., Kiswahili. The other national languages, i.e. the languages of nationalities like Luo, Gikuyu, Maasai, Luhya, Kalenjin, Kamba, Mijikenda, Somali, Gala, Turkana, Arabic-speaking people, etc., other African languages like Xhosa, Wolof, Yoruba, Igbo, Zulu, Nyanja, Lingala, Kimbundu, and foreign languages, that is foreign to Africa, e. English, French, German, Russian, Chinese, Japanese, Portuguese, Spanish, will fall into their proper perspective in the lives of Kenyan children.